You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas's 2026 football schedule's out. We'll dissect it today on the show. We'll also talk about big basketball game tomorrow against Texas Tech in Dallas. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
So we already knew the opponents on this 2026 schedule. What we found out yesterday was the order in which Arkansas will play them. And without a doubt, the biggest news item that came out of this announcement last night on the SEC Network was that Arkansas and LSU are going to play again at the end of the season. And we kind of thought this was up, 2.5, 3 months ago, when the SEC announced the permanent annual opponents for teams moving forward. And they said Arkansas's permanent opponents were going to be Texas, Missouri, and LSU. A couple of years ago, we heard it was going to be Ole Miss, not LSU. And when you saw Arkansas and LSU were supposed to play every year, but even more importantly, when you saw that old Oklahoma and LSU were not scheduled to play every year, all of a sudden, when you pay attention to the schedule stuff, you know, little red lights start flashing and they say something's up here. And what was up is that the SEC's basically, they've rearranged how teams are going to play at the end of the season. You're going to have a traditional rival now for every team at the end of the season in that rivalry weekend. A lot of these rivalry games, they're not going to get touched. Texas is still going to play Texas A&M, and there's four schools in the SEC that are still going to play ACC teams that are in-state opponents, like Florida State and Clemson and Louisville and Georgia Tech. None of that changes. What changes is that you don't have this Oklahoma-LSU matchup because we don't know what else you do with these two teams. And you don't have Arkansas-Missouri at the end of the year, which, you know, whether or not that's quote-unquote a rivalry, that can be debated for a long time. It's already been debated for like 10 years or longer. But what you do have is that you move Arkansas-Missouri off of the last weekend, and you move Arkansas-LSU back to the last weekend. You move Oklahoma-Missouri to the last weekend. That is a game. It's a border state rivalry. That series goes back to like 1902. They were rivals in the Big 8. They played in the Big 12. And Oklahoma's owned that series, but it's a series that has a lot more history and meaning, I think, to those teams than Arkansas-Missouri, and certainly more than Oklahoma and LSU. For Arkansas-LSU, this was a game for a lot of years, Ethan, where like this series has teeth to it. And I know LSU's owned the series for a long time now. Every team that Arkansas plays every year, they've owned that series for a long time now. Arkansas just hadn't been very good in a long time. But it's one of those games that whenever it was on the last weekend, there were division titles that were determined based on the winner of this. I was there in 2007 where, like, when you walked out of Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge, you would have thought a bomb had gone off. There was nobody. There was nobody around because they were so dejected that night because they thought that they had just lost a chance to win the national championship. And certainly LSU's broken Arkansas's heart a number of times too. They kept Arkansas from a perfect SEC record in 2006 and potentially from playing in the BCS national championship by beating Arkansas in Little Rock. So there's been some give and take to this series. But it's one of those that when you put it on the last weekend – and it's as entertaining as it usually is. It's a close series. The teams usually seem to bring, a competitive game out of one another. Like, this is what people want to see at the end of the year, way more than they want to see Arkansas, Missouri, and certainly more than they want to see OU and LSU.
Yeah, and I think for Arkansas fans, too, I mean, there was, I guess, 2 years of, or maybe three, however you want to look at it, of this still being, like, whenever it was the last game of the season and it being Arkansas being good at football. It's just like, I think it's happened so coincided with Arkansas's drop off, in football.
Not playing LSU has coincided with Arkansas not being any good.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like Arkansas fans view this as like, oh, a return to like the last time that we knew this was a thing. Like Arkansas was good at football. Like it was a big deal. I think that right now it's one of those deals where, like you said, it was just awkward matchups if you don't do this. And maybe Arkansas will continue being bad at football, and it will be lopsided, and it won't be good. But, I mean, I think that it just makes the most sense. It's really weird that it comes down to this, honestly, from the LSU perspective, because it's weird that they're involved with an awkward who do we play on the end of the year, because everybody views LSU as like somewhat of like, if they're not a rival, like you don't like them, I feel like, in the SEC. But it's just funny because of how the other pairings all work out in the SEC, who everybody, like Alabama, views Auburn as their biggest rival. Of course, the Egg Bowl. Like, just the way it all shakes out, Arkansas-LSU makes the most sense.
Well, it's funny how it comes full circle, because LSU, I think, is partially to blame for this going away from the last weekend of the season to begin with. When A&M came into the league, A&M and LSU, they had a series. I think they'd played like 45 times before they were SEC opponents. So, you know, certainly there's some proximity there. But LSU and A&M wanted to play each other at the end of the year. A&M wasn't playing Texas anymore, and you know, LSU and A&M, they wanted to play one another. Arkansas, Missouri, I think people saw that just kind of as a, you know, a game of convenience, if nothing else. You know, you slap an insurance logo on it, you give it a name, you give it a trophy that looks kind of like another trophy, and boom, you got a rivalry. Or at least I think that's how people thought that might work out. But so it's funny how this does come full circle. To the LSU point, they don't really have – they're kind of like Arkansas in that they don't have this one arch rival. You know, if you were to ask LSU fans, I think it comes – I think that – I've always said with Arkansas, it depends on age and it depends on geography who you consider Arkansas's biggest rival to be. Like if you live in Forest City, you might think Arkansas's biggest rival is Ole Miss. If you live in Junction City, you might think Arkansas's biggest rival is LSU, because those are the fan bases that overlap the most with you. You know, if you're 70, 80 years old, you might think Arkansas's biggest rival is still Texas, because that's what you remember from the Southwest Conference days. You know, even up here, you know, you might see Arkansas, Missouri as a bigger rivalry because, you know, you're intersecting with people who, more Mizzou fans than people are intersecting with Mizzou fans in other walks of life. And so it might be a game that means more to you. Same thing goes for LSU. You know, it might be Alabama, depending on who you ask. It might be Ole Miss. It certainly might be Ole Miss right now. Like that's kind of the hot name because of what happened after Lane Kiffin. And wouldn't you want to be at that game next season when those two teams get together? But, you know, there's no great answer for who your rival is. So you arrive at this point where LSU and Arkansas, they're kind of playing out of convenience in a way. I mean, no different than Arkansas and Missouri were doing, but it's a much more deep-seated game and series than Arkansas and Missouri was.
Yeah, and I think that if you polled like all of the Arkansas fan base and polled all of the LSU fan base of who is your biggest rival, I think Arkansas fans would say Texas overall, and I think LSU fans would say Alabama overall. And I just think that it boils down to both of those teams have an in-state arch rival that they're going to play at the end of the year. So, you know, you settle for this this being your rivalry game. I don't know if it's as much settle for Arkansas. Maybe for LSU it feels like settling, because I think for Arkansas this is like a – you can get hyped up for LSU to play them. I think if you're an LSU fan, yes, it – like, there is some hate that goes back with Arkansas for some of those years that Arkansas, you know, spoiled the end of the year for them. But I don't think that it's nearly as much as they hate, you know, Alabama and teams like that.
Well, and even like, you know, 7, even though they thought they had lost the national championship in the moment, chaos reigns the next week and LSU ends up getting into the championship and becoming the only 2-loss national champion ever, at least to this point. OU Missouri, it's kind of a game out of convenience too. College football leadership, and I don't, you know, I'm talking about everybody who's involved in this process, TV networks, conference commissioners, athletic directors, coaches, whoever is responsible for helping put together these schedules, they owe it to the fans to give them the rivalry games on a year-in and year-out basis, and they owe it to them, I think, to put the biggest rivalries at the end of the season. That's where people want their rivalries to be played at. You know, like OU, they ought to be playing Bedlam at the end of the year. Missouri, they ought to be playing KU in the border war at the end of the year. Like, these should be their end-of-year games, and then you fit the rest of your conference schedule around that, no different than you do with Florida State, no different than you do with Georgia Tech, or whatever other non-conference series you seek to preserve, or other traditions that you seek to preserve. I mean, you've got Texas OU, they play at the Red River game at the Cotton Bowl every year, and it's on the same weekend every season. Florida and Georgia, they play in Jacksonville in the cocktail party, and it's the same weekend every season. Like, you keep those games, and you set them, and you build everything else around that. Because college football, it doesn't have much, and it's losing a lot of what it has, but dadgummit, you can still keep the rivalry games. And so do what you got to do to preserve these rivalry games. And if you're an AD and you're a coach or you're a TV executive or you're a conference commissioner and you try to take away these rivalry games, you ought to be fired right on the spot, because that ought to be requirement for employment, is that number one, as a college football leader, you need to be able to, like, okay, maybe number one is win. Number two, hang on to the rivalry games.
So you're telling me that we need to throw Arkansas and Arkansas State in more Memorial State? I'm just kidding.
It's not a rivalry game.
I know. I was being sarcastic.
I knew
sarcastic.
You were going to say that too. I came prepared.
Well, I'm glad. We've very much addressed how much we don't like that idea on this show.
I would say
before,
if you were a conference commissioner, and I don't know, and like going to OU, I don't know if it's OU or OSU who's holding up Bedlam, but like if I'm Greg Sankey and OU is coming over here, I'm saying you're bringing Bedlam with you, because that's part of what makes you unique. That's part of what is special about OU football, is that one Saturday every year where we can sit down and we can watch it in Stillwater, or we can watch it in Norman, these two teams who have this, like, the best rivalry name ever. And we, like, that's part of the inventory I can take to the television executives whenever it comes time to renew the TV contract. It's just, you know, so whether it's OU and Oklahoma State, or, you know, the backyard brawl didn't get played anymore like it used to. I mean, I know it's been played off and on. You know, Nebraska, Colorado doesn't get played anymore like it used to get played. Like, there's been so many great rivalry games. Texas and Texas A&M for a lot of years, they didn't get played until Texas came and joined the SEC. There's been so many great rivalry games that have been lost because of conference realignment. So many more have been lost than great rivalry games have been formed. I mean, what's the best rivalry game that you can think of that's been formed because the Big Ten went to 18 teams? Rutgers and Oregon? No, I mean, you know, tongue in cheek. But, you know, like, I mean, seriously, Nebraska-Iowa, that's a pretty good rivalry game, and it makes a lot of sense geographically, even though Iowa owns the series. But there aren't very many that have been created like that. You know, Arkansas-Missouri, not a great rivalry game. So preserve the rivalry games. And I'm glad to see Arkansas-LSU going back to Thanksgiving, because there is a generation of fans on both sides who, that's kind of the game that you pointed to at the end of the season and said, that is the game that I expect to be eating my leftover turkey watching it on Friday or Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if you do that and you bring back to where all these teams, you know, like you bring back Bedlam and the Border War and all these, you know, rivalries, you make sure they happen, I think you would still settle on Arkansas-LSU, to be honest, based on who the others...
Based on who their other rivals have.
Like, there's not a non-conference opponent.
You're not going to choose
LSU
Alabama over the Iron Bowl.
Yeah.
You're not going to choose Arkansas-Texas over Texas and A&M.
And unlike, you know, Oklahoma and Missouri, you can't point to an out-of-conference team for either Arkansas or LSU that you say, oh, that's just a longstanding tradition. Maybe before, you know, you have the Arkansas-Texas rivalry, but, I mean, if you're doing rivalries, that's always going to get trumped by Texas and Texas A&M. It's like... It just makes the most sense, in my opinion. And I do think that along the lines of, you know, Arkansas-LSU, it being a rivalry that feels real to me, I think a lot of that has to deal with even this dark stretch of Arkansas football. Like, and they've lost all but how many games since Petrino was fired? Like, three in 2012. I even those losses, like, they've been close games, even in a lot of years that you wouldn't think it should be. I think the only ones that really stand out to me as not close was the Joe Burrow year, maybe the year before that. The two Chad Morris years, you just throw those away.
Well,
but they actually played
Morris,
them close.
They played them close.
Yeah.
There was
a Bielema year in the morning.
It was
down there.
That was a blowout. Ed Ogeron, the year he was an interim coach, they came up here and whipped Arkansas pretty good. But
and
for the most part, it
last
has been
year was 34-10 or whatever. I guess a ball,
but even
but it
that was
close.
Competitive yeah. going into the late third
but
quarter.
Like, you can point to a lot of years where you're like, well, Arkansas played you know, kind of up that game because it was a rivalry. I think that it's just a game that, like you said, there's a lot of fans who this is a thing to them. It's not like Arkansas, Missouri, where, you know, you throw a brand sponsor on it and you hope that it lands.
It was always played at War Memorial Stadium. I don't know.
Are you urging it to go back there?
I don't think it's ever going to go back there. I don't think an SEC game is ever going to go back to War Memorial Stadium. But if there was ever a game to put at War Memorial, it would be Arkansas-LSU because you know that that would fill that stadium up. And again, go back to nostalgia and all of that. But I don't think they're ever going to go back to War Memorial for a number of reasons, mostly financial. Speaking of War Memorial, no game there next year. No game at AT&T Stadium next year. For the longest time, Arkansas' schedule was just this balancing act, this juggling act between War Memorial and AT&T Stadium, and you had contracted games at one or both of those in every season. And so you were trying to fit the rest of your schedule around that, and it created some really just really puzzling-looking schedules on its face. I mean, was it 2024? They didn't play a game. They didn't play their second game in Fayetteville till October the 4th. This year, they didn't play their second game in Fayetteville till the end of September when Notre Dame came in. You know, next year, they're going to play three games in Fayetteville in September. And so this is kind of that point that they've been trying to get to where they get War Memorial off the books, they get AT&T Stadium off the books, and you can have what looks like more of a traditional schedule. All 12 games next year are going to be played on campus. And I don't know when the last time you could say that happened for the Razorbacks, except for 2020, the COVID year, when, you know, you just kind of threw all the rules out the window. This is something that is really unique. I mean, the fact that they're going to play seven on-campus games and five games on another team's campus, this does not happen very often, if ever.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I feel like seven games in Fayetteville would, I would assume, is,
I think it ties either the record.
Yeah, I'm about to say either the record or ties it. It's going to be something that I think at least I'll appreciate. I like games on campus personally, and I do think that it's, you know, it's one of those schedules that you wish was maybe in like year three of a new coach when you're really like starting to like have
but
the
there's
vision.
There's no easy schedule when you're playing in the SEC.
Well, no, I'm just saying the teams that are coming to Fayetteville, it's big name teams that you like, if you have a team that you feel like can challenge for like it being, you know, a big time atmosphere as far as like, I don't know if Arkansas will get to where they're playing ranked games again. But I don't know. They have the type of games that like you have Georgia coming in, you have Tennessee coming in, Missouri.
I think this schedule LSU repeats in 4 years. So I guess if Silverfield is successful, then in 4 years you get that kind of feel and flair to the schedule.
Yeah, because it's been a while since there's been a big game here that like it's not just big because of only the opponent, that it's been, oh, Arkansas is ranked high and they are. I'm trying to think the last one. I'm guessing it was probably 2022 or 2021.
Even that recently?
Because there was Arkansas Ole Miss that 2022 year. I guess that was like top 20 game or something, but like there's just not been many ranked on ranked games.
I'd go back to the Petrino years. Like that's been like that was the last time that you felt like you had elite teams coming in to play an elite team in its home stadium.
I'm about to say the last one that I can think of that I just remember being like, oh, this is big, was like South Carolina Arkansas.
It was an early season game. Cincinnati came in early that
year.
Well,
I was thinking South Carolina Arkansas under Petrino. Oh. There was like a top 10 game.
Yeah, that was the night of the earthquake. I'll never forget that one.
I didn't know there was an earthquake.
Oh, there was an earthquake. That's the, if you go back and you find the meme of Kirk Herbstreit, he was over in Stillwater. Oklahoma State had played a big game that night too. And also that was the night of that number one, number two Alabama LSU game that finished 9-6 in overtime, because that was happening simultaneous to another top 10 matchup, Arkansas and South Carolina, that got totally overlooked because all the eyes were down on LSU and Alabama and Tuscaloosa. But Herbstreit was in Stillwater, and there's like this, it's like a magnitude 5-point-something earthquake that had an epicenter over in Oklahoma. And he's on air as it's happening. His eyes get real big, you know, trying to stay calm as this, you know, everything's shaking around him. And even here, you know, obviously we weren't jolted as much as they were in Stillwater, but we were back in the press box after the post game. And I mean, everything's shaking and rattling. It's like, that's got to be an earthquake. I tell people all the time, I've been in three press boxes that swayed. That night, I was in Kyle Field when they played the Aggie War Hymn. And that's a weird feeling when they start swaying and sawing varsity's horns off. The press box goes back and forth. And then I was in the Georgia Dome press box the night that the tornado hit at the SEC tournament. I'll
say two of those that
was probably the most uneasy feeling.
Two natural disasters, one
one man-made.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the schedule, by the way, if you haven't seen it. Arkansas opens with North Alabama September 5th here in Fayetteville. Then they go on the road to Utah on September 12th. Back-to-back home games then, Georgia in the SEC opener on the 19th. Tulsa in the last non-conference game on September 26th. You turn the page to October. Arkansas begins at Texas A&M in College Station on October 3rd. The 10th, Tennessee comes here. They go to Vanderbilt on the 17th. Then a bye week. Missouri comes to Fayetteville on Halloween. And then in November, it goes back and forth, home and road. They go to Auburn on the 7th. South Carolina comes here on the 14th. They go to Texas on the 21st. And they end the season with LSU here in Fayetteville. You'll notice they go to Texas next year. Missouri comes here next year. That's the same that happened this year. That's just one of those scheduling quirks that you can't quite totally work around when you're doing a schedule reset the way the SEC is next year. I've said this before. I've seen it happen a couple of times in baseball after SEC expands and changes its schedule format in baseball. Just this last year, Missouri came to Baum Walker Stadium for the second consecutive year. Back about 11, 12 years ago, A&M came to Baum back-to-back season. So this is something you can't quite avoid that initial season. But then once you get through that initial season, it gets into that, you know, home and away flow, at least for these series that are played on an annual basis. Yeah. The Vanderbilt game, first time they're going to be in Vanderbilt since 2011. Petrino and James Franklin were the head coaches. James Franklin was in his first season at Vanderbilt when they played that game. And that, you know, when you talk about the 9-game conference schedule, this is really what they're trying to avoid. They're trying to avoid this deal where it's been 15 years since Arkansas went to Vanderbilt. When Kentucky comes to Fayetteville in 2027, it will have been 15 years since Kentucky came to Fayetteville. A&M's been in the league for how long? Several years. I think this was their 14th season. You realize Georgia has never been to Kyle Field. So these are the type of things that they're trying to avoid putting it on this, you know, or one of the things they're trying to change going to this 9-game schedule is just having more matchups on a more frequent basis. You can say that's good. It's certainly good for TV and just, you know, kind of having something fresh all the time. I would say for conference championships, it's not so good because you're going to have a lot of years where you probably have two teams that are in Atlanta because they got a scheduling break, whereas, you know, other teams may have had to play two or three or four college football playoff teams.
Yeah, there's just they've just had to do some random stuff, I feel like, with these schedules just to get the reset. And it does feel like, for me, like just such a strange Arkansas football schedule because we're just so not used to I mean, it's weird to look at a schedule and not see Ole Miss and Mississippi State. It feels like, you know, aside from the familiarity of LSU that Arkansas has been playing forever, and I guess at this point Missouri's pretty normal, it's like just so many teams that you just would have never played all in the same year in the past between, like, just the old SEC East. It feels like you play almost the entire old SEC East.
Well, I mean, like, there's no Ole Miss. There's no Mississippi State. There's no Alabama.
Yeah, but you've got Georgia, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Missouri, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Those are five old SEC East teams.
And plus then, Texas and Texas A&M, who weren't even in the league a decade and a half ago.
And then you've got Auburn, who's the furthest away SEC West team, right?
Old SEC West.
Old SEC West. So
there are
just
no divisions anymore.
It's a weird – it just feels like a weird schedule just because we haven't – I mean, because it is. We haven't seen it like this before. Even whenever they did the reset that we've had the past 2 years, like, you still had some of those matchups that just happened to still be on there, like the two Mississippis. It just, I don't know, it is definitely a new era of Arkansas football schedule between the home, how many home games they have, and then these opponents that you're playing within the league. We aren't used to this.
There have been so many Arkansas-Memphis ties here of late, whether it be the game or Silverfield being hired, that it's kind of easy to remember or to forget that they were supposed to play Memphis next season. Had it been an 8-game conference schedule, Arkansas would have been playing Memphis next year, which that would have, you know, been really crazy in a lot of ways. They're still going to play Memphis down the road, but not again until 28 and 30. In Fayetteville, they moved some things around. Memphis was going to be early in the season. They took that off the schedule. Tulsa was going to be in November. They moved Tulsa up to September. This is the first of a 3 game series against Tulsa, by the way. They'll play three of the next four seasons, including in Tulsa in 27. Just a quick little side note. Do you realize in 2027, Arkansas will play every team in the state of Oklahoma? They'll go to TU, they'll go to OU, and Oklahoma State will come to Fayetteville. Just kind of interesting how that works out. Let's see here. A couple more things that I noted here. One bye week next week or next year. It's been two. A lot of people have wondered, how are the bye weeks determined? Well, it's pretty simple. It is the number of weekends that fall between Labor Day weekend and the first weekend of December when the conference championship games are played. About every 5 or 6 years, you end up with a year or back-to-back years where there are, where basically an extra weekend is in that stretch. And so you get two bye weeks. We've had two straight years where there have been two bye weeks. So now we're going to go through a stretch now where there are a lot of years in succession with one bye week.
Yeah, and Arkansas is going to need its bye week when it comes next year. If they've already played at Utah, Georgia, at A&M, Tennessee, and at Vanderbilt. I mean, that's a tough opening to this season. It's sandwiched between at Vanderbilt and at home against Missouri, which I feel like, you know, you always look at a schedule of like, what team can you get maybe rested up and prepared for? And Arkansas, you know, it has not been very successful against Missouri in recent history. Maybe getting this bye week next year right before Missouri at a different time of year, it'll change the vibes up a little bit.
And I wrote down here, too, the familiarity with Silverfield and some of these teams they're going to play. There's obviously the familiarity with Tulsa. TU and Memphis played quite a bit because they were members of the American. I think Silverfield, as an assistant or a head coach, he's played TC, or his team has played TU maybe 7 or 8 times in the last 10 years. So, I mean, it's quite a frequent series. And then Auburn, there's some familiarity there too. And that's going to be a really interesting game because, Alex Golas, we know he was a finalist for the Arkansas job. Silverfield ends up getting the job. And those two faced off 3 times in the American, and Silverfield's team beat South Florida all 3 times.
And we know how this works, that there's any year with a lot of coaching changes in the SEC, that you use how those coaches are doing as a measuring stick on how the hires were. I mean, we do the same with, what was it, Pittman, Lane Kiffin, Drinkwitz.
And Mike Leach.
Mike Leach. Like, mm-hmm. We did the same thing.
And Pittman went 2-1 against them that first year.
It makes it, like, kind of a, in a weird way, like, those schools feel very competitive with each other, just as far as, like, trying to show that they had the best hire of the cycle. It does help for Arkansas that Missouri and Ole Miss were like teams you played every year. But I know Arkansas fans will be interested with how Golish does at Auburn for sure.
Any other thing that stands out to you? There's a lot being made about Georgia being their first SEC opponent and it coming off the heels of a road trip to Utah. My question is, like, what SEC team are you going to get right there in that spot that's going to be easy?
I don't know.
Can't play yourself?
Yeah, I'm about to say, I guess they would like South Carolina that early as far
maybe
as...
maybe Kentucky?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like Arkansas is at the bottom of the SEC right now. Like, at the they are alone in the basement. Kentucky may have a foot in the door, but, yeah, like, they're at the very bottom. Any team you're going to play in the SEC is going to be a really difficult game for the Razorbacks right now.
But, I mean, it is, like, dead last and first. That is a big – I mean, I'm not over here saying, like, honestly, maybe it's better to play Georgia early in the year. I think we saw this year that they figure things out as
Sam Pittman's
goes.
First game is against Georgia, yeah, and that was actually a pretty competitive – now, Georgia pulled away in the fourth quarter, but I think it was like, what, 8?
Even in that loss, you knew that we had moved on to this isn't Chad Morris ball anymore.
No, for sure.
And so I think that getting Georgia early in the year might be a blessing. I mean, you're – I think any team that played Georgia earlier this year
would say they
chance.
Would like to play yeah. them then than now.
Yeah, so I mean, it is what it is my thing. It is, of course, like the largest margin you can get in the SEC as far as how the teams finish this year, but like each year's so different. We know that for a fact. I mean, you look at, if you had this schedule years ago, you're like thanking God you get Vanderbilt before a bye week. And then you're going to, you know, basically you get to win and get a rest week. Well, that's not the case anymore. Vanderbilt is not the same Vanderbilt. So things change. And some of these teams on here that don't look like the scariest opponents next year will be scarier. And some of them that look like gauntlets might have a drop off.
You just said one of my pet peeves. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Have you ever thought about what that means?
It is what it is.
Like, it's never what it isn't. Have you ever thought about that?
Not this deeply. I'm now thinking about it a lot deeper than normal.
It's one of those sayings that people just kind of say, just, I think, to move along a conversation.
I think my least favorite, I have one of these, is to be honest. Like, were you being dishonest with me first?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to be honest.
I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah. Like, were you being not perfectly honest or perfectly dishonest?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Or I'm not lying. I'm not going to lie. That's the one. I'm not going to lie.
NGL.
And I'm gonna tell you that I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to tell you the truth that I'm not going
to
lie.
I will have it noted now to not say it is what it is. I will just say, what should I say instead? Just nothing?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just...
Just move on to your
I'll
next
just move on.
Every one of my friends, if they ever say it is what it is, I always respond, it's never what it isn't. All right.
I'm glad that we've crossed that bridge now.
Yeah, new territory here in our friendship. When we come back, we're going to talk Razorback basketball. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Did you see this story that South Carolina is suing a fan because he claims that he's got lifetime tickets at the 50-yard line based on, I guess he's had them for several decades and his father had them for decades before that. And now they're moving, like they are eliminating that seat and they're going to put a suite at Williams-Brice Stadium in that spot as part of this $350 million overhaul. I got several thoughts on this, but when you see that, what do you think?
I just saw the headline. I didn't even know really any details. I just thought it was funny that they're suing a lifelong fan.
It's litigating against the fan. This really, I think this is, I'm not going to say it's commonplace, but I don't think it's totally without precedent either, that you have to go to a claims court to figure out things like this. My bigger question here is, why are they sinking $350 million into Bryce Williams Stadium? That is a 91-year-old stadium. If I'm not mistaken, I've been there a few times. I think it's on the state fairgrounds in Columbia. I don't think that's part of campus. It's strange. Like it's strange to me how these programs continue to dump hundreds of millions of dollars into these old stadiums that I don't think were meant to last forever. Instead of taking that money and maybe a little bit more and putting it in and investing it into new stadiums, into new properties that can be developed better, that can be planned better. You can put them closer to the interstate where or a major highway where you've got better flow of traffic in and out of the stadium. You can you can have land around there where you can maybe make some of these mixed use developments, like is really the fad right now with facilities. That's the strangest part to me, is that you're sinking $350 million into a 91-year-old stadium. And it's really the biggest difference, I feel like, between college and the NFL. And maybe this is a little bit of double talk because I was talking about preserving rivalries. You can't keep much in college right now. But I just feel like it would be a better investment for these football teams. And I thought this when Arkansas, by the way, when they built that North End Zone complex over at Razorback Stadium 8-9 years ago, I thought at that time they would have been much better suited to take that money and go build a stadium somewhere south side of campus instead of continuing to pour money into Razorback Stadium, where you've got all kinds of problems with traffic and parking and everything. It just seems like it's a problem. Problem may not be the right word because some people may not see it as a problem, but it's something that happens a lot in college football where there's just not a lot of creative thinking. It's, hey, we got Death Valley, we got Bryant-Denny Stadium, we got Neyland Stadium. We're going to have to just continue to build and build and build and build on these things because – there's just no. It seems like there's no appetite for something new outside of the handful of schools that actually you know, have gone out and gotten rid of their old stadium and built something nicer for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, nostalgia is a big thing for a lot of people, and I'm sure, you know, any project like this where you're, it requires a lot of money for a lot of people who are, you know, pony up and help out with it. Nostalgia is a real thing, and they don't want to see that change. It's just, it's, it takes a lot of either circumstance making it inevitable that I think you have to do that, or really, you know, being able to convince people to adapt to some big new change. I mean, personally, I would be sad to see Razorback Stadium leave. I get it. It's a headache with, you know, traffic flow and whatnot. And, but I mean, it's that view coming down. I don't know. It's nostalgic for
that'd
me.
Be a nice view from a dorm room too.
Yeah.
And they need some on-campus housing. I mean, like when I came here for college, there were 17,000 people enrolled at the U of A. There are now 35,000, 34,000 enrolled at the U of A. And I think there have been two new dorms built during that time.
Yeah. Well,
you know, so I'm not saying bulldoze Razorback Stadium and build dorms there, but if you built a new stadium somewhere else and you were able to plan it better for parking and traffic and all these things that I mentioned earlier, you got a nice big piece of real estate that you could certainly help out an on-campus housing, I don't know if I'd call it crisis, but certainly a problem that they face on a year-in and year-out basis.
For sure. I just am saying I get it from the fans' nostalgic standpoint of there's so many memories at that one stadium, and it's hard.
Sometimes I think that to renovate, it almost may cost more than a new construction. Like Penn State, they're putting $700 million into renovating that stadium that they've got, Beaver Stadium. Like, are you telling me you couldn't build a new football stadium, a new college football stadium for somewhere in the $700 million range? Maybe not. I mean, I know that, yeah, I know what they're spending in the NFL, but I also know that in the NFL, there's a lot of other factors like real estate cost in these large metro areas that can play into this. And certainly, you know, they're going for like the highest of high end type facilities.
Well, and those stadiums all host so many other things too.
They do.
Where it's very
multi-use stadiums.
Yeah. Razorback Stadium is there for, you know, I guess the past few years it was like five Saturdays in the fall.
Yeah, maybe Banana Ball moving forward in a concert. Anyway, that's just a thought that I had. It's just I really do wonder about the viability of these old stadiums. Mm-hmm. Like what's the long term, what's the long term health of these stadiums to keep. I mean, when they're 90-something years old, they're 100-something years old. A&M, they knocked down Kyle Field and rebuilt it and felt like a day. But there are not a whole lot of teams that are going to be doing stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's you see it in a lot of like other sports like softball, baseball. Like whenever these SEC schools do just build a new stadium, they can get it really nice and like modern and recruits. It's a tool. It really is.
You know, and I mentioned the things that are outside the stadium, like inside the stadium. Wider concourses, better restrooms, better concession areas. I mean, like there are so many things you can do to make the game day and the game going experience better. And, you know, in this day and age, when you can't get people in your stadiums for a number of reasons, I think that's one of the reasons that the NFL has done what they've done. You know, why you continue to see so many of these stadiums go by the wayside is to continue to create that, you know, that feeling that you can only get in the game and have like a comfortability and a convenience once you get there.
Yeah. There will be zero nostalgia involved for me the day that Bud Walton bathrooms change because I hate those bathrooms in there. Like, I mean, there's some...
You don't like the community sinks?
Oh, my goodness. I'm like, it's 2025, y'all. Why do we have zero divider between all these urinals in here? Like, what are we doing? And you have to step on the button and it's cold water coming out and you just feel like, this is not the best. I won't... I love Bud Walton and keep a lot of it intact if you can, but man, change those bathrooms.
You'll be there to help on demo day with the urinals.
Yeah, like I guess War Memorial had a whole new... We wrote about this, I think, and they redid their bathrooms at War Memorial and they got a whole football team in there to flush at the same time.
I thought it was just that they got their plumbing fixed.
That might be it. They had to test it.
Yeah, they had to test it.
But if
they,
Bud
they
Walton,
had to have several people flushing at once.
If Bud Walton redoes the bathrooms and needs a test, I'll donate my time to go over there and help flush.
It's so. Like Chip Gaines going over there with a sledgehammer. moving on. Arkansas plays Texas Tech tomorrow. 11 o'clock tip-off on ESPN2, I believe, that they play the Red Raiders. Texas Tech number 16, Arkansas is number 17. This is a really interesting game to me because it feels like a game that Arkansas ought to be able to win. But certainly I would think Texas Tech probably goes into this game kind of thinking the same. It's interesting to me that you've heard all week, whether it be John Calipari or I heard Chen Coleman on a podcast this morning talking about this. I think we've heard players talk about it. Revenge, 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 revenge from last year. I can see that help. Like I can see that working in a team's favor, and I can also see that like working against them when revenge is kind of the main, you know, kind of the main topic of the week, and maybe that can skew your attention from some of the other things that you need to be focusing on. But certainly, that game in San Francisco is kind of the backdrop to what we're going to see in Dallas tomorrow. Yeah.
And there's only a handful of Arkansas players who it directly, you know, those are the core of returners, Billy Richmond, Carter Knox, CJ Wagner, Trevin Brazil, who are on that team. For a lot of them, like, you know, Darius Acuff, Malik Thomas, they were signed at that point, but like, I don't know. It's just, it's a new, the college rosters now, mostly new players on both sides.
Well, Texas Tech's got what, two players back from that
Toppin team? Toppin and Anderson, and Anderson's the guy who hit all those three-pointers mm-hmm. toward the end of the game.
I think they can. I looked up the game story yesterday, and I think they combined for 42.
Yeah. They,
which is half their points. I think it was an 85-83 game.
I know John Calipari doesn't rewatch games very often. I don't.
He said he rewatched
either.
That one.
Yeah, I rewatched this one the other day just to be – I wanted to kind of like see what it was like again because I get it. When you're in the arena, I think there's just a sense of shock all mm-hmm. throughout there. And I just kind of wanted to see if I watched this, you know, so removed from it now, you know what happens. You just kind of watch how it unfolds. It didn't become – when I did that, it did not become less like just wow to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't believe this actually happened because mm-hmm. Arkansas – I forget, maybe it was Nelly Davis hits a three and goes up 59-43 with like 11 minutes left. And it just felt then like this is all Arkansas. They came out and they...
Texas Tech couldn't hit a shot.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I think Texas Tech started maybe 2 of 17 or something mm-hmm. shooting. And they were ice cold. And then there was that one possession. There were actually two of my point back to that game. The one that Texas Tech got like 6 offensive mm-hmm. rebounds and mm-hmm. they hit a three. And you're like, okay... things might be changing. And then Arkansas's up 69-61, gets an offensive rebound with like, I don't remember how many minutes left. It was under the final media timeout. And you get a shot clock reset and DJ Wagner hoists a three mm-hmm. yeah. while the clock is on your side. And then you end up, Texas Tech hits the shot that ties it and sends it to overtime with the differential that you would have had mm-hmm. you just drugged that possession. And I get it. Things changed based on what had have happened that possession. But like the math mathed out that Arkansas needed to have run off more time. And it just was the type of game that it almost everything that I don't want to say everything that bag that could have happened to Arkansas happened over the stretch, because I mean they still had some guys hit some shots that like helped them hang around in overtime and stuff, but like they just, it was a you can't believe it type of game in my opinion. Like you just how that unfolded with Christian Anderson just catching fire and you know, there was a feeling in the arena that night, too, in San Francisco of just like, I don't know when exactly it was, but late in the game, you could just feel it in the arena like, oh, all of a sudden things are really tense. And as Arkansas had played so many games right before that where they had led and let leads slip away but held on, but that one just felt so different. I can't put a finger on it why, but it just, I think it was that six offensive rebound possession that you knew this one feels a little bit different. It feels like they're like right now it is them versus the clock. Against Texas that year at the end of the year, against St. John's, Kansas, I never like felt like they were going to actually surrender it and lose the game for whatever reason. But Texas Tech, it felt like if this thing goes any longer, they're losing this game. And of course, in overtime, they lose. Trevin Brazil hit a three that tied it late. And then I think maybe it was Anderson or Toppin, one of the two. It was Williams for them. Darion Williams, I think was his name. He hit the shot that ended up being the game winner in overtime. But
it's kind of weird. I was looking at this as you were talking. Like the times that Arkansas has actually played the team that knocked them out of the NCAA tournament the year before, this really is rare that you get a chance to do this. You go back 30 some odd years, they got to play Duke several months after Duke beat them at the Final Four in 1990. They beat Duke at Madison Square Garden. And the only other time I can think of that this happened was The 17 team, you know, they lost that game to UNC, which kind of felt like the Texas Tech game mm-hmm. this last year, where they lost to North Carolina in the second round. I think that was out in South Carolina where they played that, maybe in Greenville. Mm-hmm. And then they played UNC, I think, early the next season up at the Phil Knight Invitational in Portland. But so it's really rare that you get that chance for revenge. How do you think this is going to go? And what do you think the keys are to this game? Because, again, when you look at it on paper, it just feels like these two teams, they feel very evenly matched in that they've got the same record. You know, the teams they've lost to are really good teams. I would say the quality of losses for Arkansas have been slightly better than the quality of losses for Texas Tech. And I would say probably Arkansas's best win is better than Texas Tech's best win. But – yeah, again, I think it's probably going to be a true neutral site there. I don't know that either team's really going to have a huge advantage in the stands. It's hard to really put your finger on how this is going
to
go.
Yeah, I think that it boils down to me to, does Arkansas's front court step up? And I mean, if JT Toppin is the best player in the game, I think Arkansas's probably lost, to be honest. I just think that if he takes over, I get it, three is worth more than two, and Arkansas might be able to outshoot him or whatever with Malik Thomas and from outside, but I just think if you look at the end of this game and JT Toppin really left his fingerprint all over it, it might have been what lost it for Arkansas. I always like to look at the games that a team has lost to maybe come up with what's the blueprint for beating them. And you look at them versus Purdue. I mean, Purdue just shut down, clamped up defensively. Texas Tech shot 24% from 3-point in that game, 33% field goal. And it's always funny because the rebounding battle, if you're ever shooting that bad, unless the other team just has terrible defensive rebounding, the rebounding battle will be crazy too. But, I mean, Purdue shot 60% in that game and 57% three-point. So the rebound battle was 43-25, which, I mean, obviously if you make shots, you don't get a rebound. But it's like, I think Arkansas, if they can come out defensively and set a tone and don't give up second-chance opportunities for Texas Tech, they have a really good chance. And I think that if Trevin Brazil can do what he did against Louisville, where he's kind of the X factor early, and it's not JT Toppin. I think that's the recipe for Arkansas.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is, you know, like with Thomas and Acuff, I feel like you're going to get you're getting consistent performances from those two. I feel like both of them are consistently going to be double-digit scorers for you. Now, you can be a double-digit scorer and scoring 10, and that's a lot different than if you're scoring 18, 19 points. But Brazil, I feel like he is like the biggest factor for the Razorbacks because – and especially in a big game, when he's going in a big game, it seems like just the level of play really, you know, he raises the level of play of everybody else around him. I found a clip, and you were there in the in October at the basketball media day down in Birmingham, and he said that or John Calipari said that Trevin Brazil needs to be averaging a double double and giving them about 4 or 5 blocks a game. Like that is what his ceiling ought to be this year. And, you know, against some of the opponents they've had, he's given them that type of performance or something pretty close to it. But there have been too many times with him this year where he just kind of disappears. You know, Michigan State, he had foul trouble. Or, I mean, you look at Fresno State the other day, he just had 4 points in that game. Like he can't disappear as frequently as he is right now. They need better play out of him consistently than I think what they're getting. And to his credit, it does seem like when they play better teams and he stays out of foul trouble, he does play a better brand of basketball. But We'll see if that works out tomorrow.
And I think it's him and a few, like Carter Knox as well. It's just like you just are looking
for
consistency.
It's Wagner. It's a number of them.
And I think that in games like this, if you think back to Arkansas's deep run last year in March, what happened? Nelly Davis was playing his best ball of the season. Carter Knox emerged, was playing better.
Mm-hmm. Wagner was really good.
Brazil was playing his best basketball by far at the end of the season. And then the real one was Jonas Adu. All of a sudden was the Jonas Adu that you expected the preseason. I think that this Arkansas team, that as the season goes, you'll see some of those guys step up and do the same type of thing where that you elevate your game as the season goes. This would be a great game to see flashes of that. Like, I'm not saying that you got to get the whole team all of a sudden, you know, all playing up to their level. But it felt like last year that Kentucky game, they went on the road and everybody who was on the court did something good. It wasn't like we're having now where it's like kind of, hot or cold. Like either somebody's on and this person's off. You just saw everybody start to contribute and figure out their role. And that's what happens in a basketball season is it takes time to gel and learn how to play with these two freshmen that are so good. I mean, your role just changes so much. Mm-hmm. I think that Arkansas, Billy Richmond, if he is, he can be an X factor. Him and Trevin Brazil tomorrow, if you just get one of these, one or two of these guys stepping up, Malik Ewan, he was against Duke at points you felt like he was being an X factor. You just need some of those performances. I think that if they kind of play the way they did against Duke, because I thought they got contributions that maybe you weren't expecting that game. I think Texas Tech, you should beat them if you get that. I think
played
Duke
a good
was
game
really
Duke.
Good.
They played. Yeah. It's just they couldn't stop.
Boozer, yeah. Boozer. Boozer or Boozer?
Boozer.
Boozer. Yeah. Yeah,
Bruiser. That's what they call him.
Yeah, I'm about to say, he was just so good that game. And you wonder, like, if they were to meet later in the year, if play him any bet, like, is he just going to do this all season long? You just have to catch him on an off night.
He's doing it to most teams. It's not just he's doing it to Arkansas.
But I think
it's pretty impressive what he's doing. I'd say he's probably National Player of the Year at this point. Yeah.
But I think Arkansas, like, if you just play kind of how you did against Texas Tech, where you have people step up and you can eliminate JT Toppin as much as you can, like, I just think that's the you're going to win if you do that. I think Arkansas, position for position, maybe aside from Toppin, should be able to go head to head and do all right.
This is Cameron Boozer's last three games against, by the way, Arkansas, Florida, and Michigan State. This is not sliced liver here that he's doing this against. 35-9, 29-6, 18-15.
He's doing the individual version of what Michigan's doing as a team.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point.
Where it doesn't matter who he's against.
This is like, this is make one of those good hypotheticals. Cameron Boozer against Michigan. Who wins?
And it's funny to me because I think that I think he's going to run into a game this year on the road with fans where they're going to call some of these fouls. Like that I like to see them let a big man play. I just do. But against Arkansas, like, there were quite a few plays that I'm like, the refs could have called that. But I get it. They're staying consistent and not. I think there's going to be some games this year on the road where you get more foul calls. Speaking of, like Texas Tech went to Illinois and the foul differential was what lost them that game. That just happens in college basketball, the foul differential. And I think the Boozer will get a bad whistle sometime.
Arkansas's been on the better end of the foul differentials this year more often than not. I mean, like, yeah. I can't think of a game off the top of my head where you look at it and you say, wow, that's a huge free throw discrepancy in favor of the other team. Now, there have been a couple, three games where Arkansas has ended up with a ton more free throws than their opponent. But it seems like from a foul perspective, at least to this point, they've been good in that regard.
Yeah. So Texas Tech, when they lost to Illinois, it was 81-77, right? 4-point game. Texas Tech shot 4 free throws. Illinois shot 23. There's your game right there. They literally they got outscored by 13 just in free throws. So I think for Arkansas, if they can win the, I'm looking at, can you hold Texas Tech below 30% 3-point like the two teams that beat them have, and can you maybe win the foul battle on a neutral court and shut down JT Toppin? I think those are some of your keys.
Real quick before we get out of here, women's basketball goes to Missouri State tomorrow, 1 o'clock tip off in Springfield. This is, talk about revenge. You get Kelsey Music and a couple of her players who came over here from ORU. Their last game last season was what, like a 31-point loss to Missouri State? Killed. And so there's probably a little bit of get back on their mind too. This is kind of one of those sneaky, like it feels like it could be a kind of a sneaky good game. They both have decent records to this point. You know, that's probably due in part to who they played. But it's one of those games where whoever comes out of there winning this game tomorrow, I think they're going to feel really good about having beaten the opponent they beat.
For sure. And I think that, I mean, ESPN analytics favor Missouri State to win this game on its home court. I mean, they're a good team. They just almost beat Kansas, who's projected to either just make the tournament or right outside. And they lost to Kansas in overtime. They could have very well beat them. I think they were up by 13 late. But this is a game that if Arkansas could win it, it would certainly be one of those non-conference games that ends up actually, there's so many games on your non-conference schedule that just get thrown in that quad four category. Mm-hmm. Like you just play a lot of teams that are down there in the 200s. Missouri State will hover from like 130 to could crack the top 100 all year to where it could be quad three, I guess. But it's a game that they very well could lose tomorrow, but they also very well could win.
I didn't realize Missouri State had changed its arena name.
I couldn't have told you what the old name was.
Well, I was there the night it opened. John Q. Hammond's Arena. I think it was Hammond's. Might have been Hammond's Center. I know it had Hammond's name on it. And Missouri State beat Arkansas, and they stormed the court. This was a John Pelfrey team. This would have been November of 2008. I can tell you how I
remember
that.
Was that the one loss in the whole streak of like they beat Texas and Oklahoma?
No. No, this is a different this is a different time.
Okay, well, there was one year, didn't Missouri State snap and they were like unbeaten? Or maybe I'm thinking getting mixed up with women's.
Was that the loss that year?
I don't know. We're going to do a real quick check, fact check here. Shout out Hogstats.
No, you're right. That was the one loss. I think you're right. I think that was the loss when they had beat OU in Texas.
And so they and were everybody, unranked.
Yeah, and everybody was ending the non-conference saying, you've got to extend John Pelfrey's contract. And then they were taking that back 5 weeks later.
Yeah, no, they entered SEC play with one loss, and it was at Missouri State.
54-49.
No, 62-57.
Well, I knew it was a five-point game, and I knew it was low scoring.
Hey, and shout out to you because on the notes on Hogstats, the JQH Arena opening is left as a note.
I mean, like, who could forget it? Who could forget being there in Springfield? Here's what I remember about that. You think about 2008 and the difference in technology than it is now. Arkansas was playing a football game against Mississippi State that afternoon, and I was listening to that game on Magic 107.9, which was a 100,000-watt station out of Fayetteville. And it carried me until a certain point on I-44 in Missouri, and then it started to kind of, you know, go in and out. Like you could pull up an app and listen to it. Maybe I could have found it on an AM radio station or something. So anyway, I have to pull over on the side of the road on I-44 to listen to Chuck Barrett describe that Alex Tejada misses this field goal that could have sent it to overtime, and then I get going again and get on down the road to Springfield. And misery loves company, and so the basketball team decided that they would get beat by a Quanzo Martin coach team that night, and everybody stormed the floor in Springfield.
And how things have changed. I'm looking at on Hogstats, it has the TV column, too. At this same time this season, Arkansas had not yet played a game on, like, any sort of ESPN or something. CSS? They'd played on CSS? They played on RSP? Like
Comcast Sports?
I guess, and they'd played on RSP.
Razorback Sports Properties.
Yeah, and then the rest of the schedule, they got like a couple ESPNs, and other than that, learned some Raycom. That's where you were watching the team at.
It was a different day.
It's just crazy how things have changed so much over the years with how you can access this stuff. Just
I don't think they're going to rush the court tomorrow if the women beat Arkansas.
Yeah, I'd be very shocked. Missouri State's got a good women's team, and their coach is really good, too. Her name was floated around a lot this past offseason as somebody who one of these maybe power schools could hire. She's used to be an assistant at, I believe, Duke and Notre Dame, and those are two good women's programs with great coaches. So they're a well-coached, good team, and they could very well beat Arkansas tomorrow. But if Arkansas does win, it's a nice win. It would probably be considered at this point their second-best win if they were to win it.
We'll have coverage of everything this weekend at our website, wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you there. We'll have a podcast on Monday. I won't be here Monday, but either Ethan or Christina, maybe both of them, will be in here to look back at these basketball games over the weekend. Hope that you'll join us then. Have a great weekend, everybody.